Good morning, everybody. I'm really happy to be here to introduce somebody that I've admired for a long time. Dana Carden is a nationally award-winning local journalist who has made his career telling stories to everyday Iowans. He has worked for KCCI throughout his entire working career, first 15 years as a journalist and somebody on camera that most people knew back then. And then he went behind the scenes as the assistant news director. How many remember Dana when he was on TV? I'm curious how many of us are old enough to do this. You know, he started right after when Russ Van Dyke retired. Anybody else remember Russ Van Dyke? You know, we're an older group here, I tell you. You know, some of the stories that he has covered over his years with KCCI was the Johnny Gosch story. I think most of us remember that from years ago. He was also behind the camera in 1993 when we had the year of the big flood in Des Moines. His feature series, Eye on Iowa, became something that people looked forward to. I remember those days when he was in front of the camera, along with another really important LGBT plus ally, Mary Brubaker. This is when I first got to know Dana and Mary, was when the All Iowa AIDS benefit was going on. I had just been diagnosed in 1986 with being HIV positive. I was planning on, you know, how do I end my life? When I became involved with the All Iowa AIDS Benefit. Who was on stage then? Mary Brubaker and Dana Carden. It was a time period when not everybody wanted to be attached to the homosexual community. It took, I think, some brave people and allies to go ahead and support us. Dana was there. It made a significant impact on me, and I was very much appreciative of his support. I've had the opportunity of following Dana's family as it's grown. When he got married to his husband, Ryan Kohler, they've adopted a child and have raised a son, Christian, who is now 24 years old. You know, it's hard to believe when you remember when they got Christian. And most recently, after his retirement, they've now added somebody else to their family, Micah, who I noticed has over 300 likes on Facebook. Yeah, that's more than I ever get anywhere. So it's my pleasure to introduce somebody I've admired from a long time, Dana Carden. Thank you.
Somehow I knew it was going to come up. Here's Micah, just so you know. It's the reason why 7 o'clock is not so early anymore. Gary, thank you. I kind of feel like I'm at a Thanksgiving dinner with everyone I know, and I'm going to stand up and say, I'm going to give a speech now. It seems a little awkward, but you know, I look at the people over here who have had such an impact on me over the years, and it's just an honor to be up here standing in front of you. So I'm going to give a speech to my Thanksgiving dinner here. So what's your story? Probably one of the lamest pickup lines that you would ever hear. And it's also the line that kept me employed for a long, long time, for almost 50 years as a Navy journalist for 5 years, and then as a reporter and news manager at KCCI. I literally traveled the world and all around Iowa telling people stories from the top of Mount Fuji to the depths of the ocean in a nuclear submarine. From Moscow, Russia to Moscow, Iowa, I tried to reach out to folks and ask them, hey, what's your story? It was from the rich and famous, the powerful politicians, to my favorite stories, the everyday Iowans who give our state and our lives so much charm, color, and character. There's really thousands of stories that when you boil it all down into the simplest concise terms is just going in front of someone and saying, hey, what's your story? And that's really the question I have for you this morning is, what's your story? And with that question comes this. Are you willing to raise your hand and tell it to the world? If Lester Holt or some 60 Minutes crew showed up on your doorstep, would you go, hey, I want to tell my story? How many here would raise your hands when they did that? I understand that. One of the most difficult jobs, a part of my job over the years, is getting people to raise their hands and say, yeah, I'll tell you my story. Oh, sir, you just pulled some nuns and orphans out of a burning building. Can I talk to you? No. Other people did it. I was just a part of the crew, so it was nothing. People are often shy and humble, and often don't understand the importance or the impact of the stories and how it can inspire others. But you take a look around this room and you see all the folks here who have shared their stories over the years. John, Jonathan, Bill, I mean, people who have come forward and said, yeah, I'll tell my story. And just think the impact they have had on you. I can say that they've had a huge impact on me, though I'm neglecting telling them that, is that they've inspired me. Their stories have helped me grow. Sometimes they frighten me, but they've helped me take the next step forward, even when the days are a little darker than I wish they would have been. And really, that's the power of stories. And that's my message to you this morning, is that your story can inspire. Your story is important, and your story needs to be told. I'm going to be honest. A few months ago, when Byron asked me if I'd be willing to talk to the First Friday Breakfast Club, I did not immediately raise my hand. like many of you, I don't think my story is all that interesting or all that extraordinary. And, you know, I'm an Iowan. I don't like to talk about myself too much once in a while. But if you know Byron, you know that if he is anything, he is persistent. So, you know, okay, yeah, I'll, it's 7 o'clock in the morning. Well, maybe not. But I didn't really want to be that person that I ran into all the time saying, oh, I don't want to tell you my story. You just go. The thing that irritated me the most, I didn't want to be that person. So, okay, I'll do it. Because actually, I do have some pretty interesting things that I've done over the years. Let's see, I've got a list. I've been shot at. I've been assaulted. I've been in blimps, in biplanes, in fighter aircraft. I've spent the day with Kevin Costner as he filmed The Field of Dreams. I was about this far away from Roger Moore and Barbara Bach as they filmed the James Bond movie, The Spy Who Loved Me, in Sardinia, of all places. I've talked with, I'm glad we have an older crew here, Mickey Rooney, Dan Rather. And I got to talk to my childhood hero, astronaut John Glenn. I know. It's like no one wanted to be a fireman when I was a kid. We wanted to be an astronaut. I've partied with Bart Connors and Nadia Comaneci. I've asked the Vice President of the United States, who later became president, are you a wimp? And as a kid in Sheldon, Iowa, in the northwest corner of the state, I grew up playing with Mike Streit, who became one of the justices on the Iowa Supreme Court who decided Varnum. And I played with Bob Vanderplaats, who lived about a block away from me. Yeah, it was just weird. I've covered Hurricane Andrew when it tore through southern Florida. I've covered the explosion of the USS Iowa that killed 47 sailors aboard. A lot of big stories. But I have to say that the stories that I like the most are the people who I just run into on the street and say, hey, tell me your story. I had the opportunity to just take off for a week and nothing in mind, no stories in mind, and go out and find them. And so you just come up to people and go, tell me something. Tell me your story. One of our photographers has a saying that he always, how he described his job. And he says, you know, I really have the ultimate backstage pass to life. And that's really kind of what it was. We got to witness a lot of history and a lot of the significant happenings and just go out and talk to people and have a better understanding of who people are. So after some more emails from Byron, I said, all right, even if it's 7 o'clock, I'll come and talk to you, even though I'm not really excited about doing it because I don't like getting in front, like you, I don't like getting up in front of people. I know I had a career doing this, but I don't like getting up and talking about things like this. I like to tell other people's stories. Didn't hurt that my mother-in-law is coming today. It's like, and this meeting lasts till 4 o'clock, if anyone asks. But the thing is, I'm here, but I'm not going to talk about any of that stuff. And Byron's going, what? Now, you know, my editors and producers felt over the years. It's like, yeah, I'm not going to talk about that. Because I just didn't think it was the message. It wasn't what we need to hear today. I'm going to tell you something you know, but I want to put an exclamation point on it, is that there is a renewed effort to ban our stories, to burn our books, to rewrite our history, and to simply make us go away. So how do we fight that? I don't know. But I know talking about the other stuff that I've done isn't what we need to talk about. I'm a storyteller, and I know from my experience that there is power in telling your story. I mean, you see that power of the story from Jonathan when he was brave enough to tell his. You see that story in John, who's lost jobs and has been a spokesperson and a person we could all look up to over the years. You see that power in Gary's story as a veteran who survived the jungles of Vietnam to come back here to survive being a gay man and having AIDS. Their stories have power. They have impact. And no one's story should ever be deleted. Every time they try to ban our stories, to burn our books, to erase our histories, we need to be willing to raise our hands and tell more stories, more truth, more history. And we can't wait. The time to tell our stories, the time to tell your stories is right now. So if you'll indulge me a minute, I'm going to raise my hand and tell at least a little of my story. I was summoned to the boss's office, not called, not requested, not asked. I was summoned. I knew I was in trouble. As I walked into the office and the boss closed the door behind me, I knew this was not good. Crap. But to be honest, I knew why I was there. Frankly, I had been an ass. I had a bad attitude. I was insubordinate. a jerk, an ass. Not like me at all. Well, almost not like me at all. He had me sit down, and then he started talking to me, telling me all of the problems that he had with me. I just sat there. I stared at the mauve walls and the Leroy Neiman tennis print that was hanging next to me on those walls. And trust me, they didn't work together. The mauve walls and the Leroy Neiman. The strangest things that go through your mind when you're about to have your ass handed to you. As he was talking, some point down the line, I really wasn't hearing. It was kind of, my head was buzzing. I felt a tear coming down out of my eye. And I just started crying. I had no idea why. I mean, I've been yelled at by a boss before, not the first time. I was in the Navy and survived boot camp. I know what it's like to be yelled at. And then it was the ugly crying, kind of the worst ugly crying that you've ever seen or heard. And I wish for a moment that I could have a picture of my boss's face as he was sitting there going, what the hell did I say to cause that? And how the hell do I stop it? But the fact is, I couldn't stop. I just sobbed, tried to gasp for air. It was like, what the hell? You know those snapshots in life where it's a moment of clarity, of focus, of purpose, kind of like the scenes out of the coming-of-age movies where suddenly the protagonist understands their purpose and their mission in life. Like, I know, Dead Poets Society or Stand By Me. Well, for me, that was my snapshot moment. And suddenly a calm came over me. The crying stopped. And as I dried away the last tears from the box of tissues that my boss thrust in front of me, I knew that the fears of losing my job, the perceived shame, and the pretending that I was doing all needed to end. I needed to live my truth, my life, follow my path, even if I didn't know exactly what that was. I handed that box of tissues back to my boss. And as I reached for the doorknob to leave, I wondered in that instant if my boss realized that by calling me into his office to chew me out, that he most likely saved my life that day and helped me open the door to a new beginning. So why is it important that we tell our story? Our culture, our community, is in large part made up of the stories and experiences that we hand down from generation to generation. Stories told over time through cave drawings, paintings, poetry, song, photographs, news reports, and now Facebook, Snapchat, TikTok, or simply telling them around the dinner table with the family, campfires in church, or from a bar stool. And until recently, our stories have been in the shadows. They've been silenced. They've been excluded and minimized. And the good news is, fortunately, we now have more stories and books than ever before. Every day, another celebrity comes out, another athlete comes out, another book is written, another story is told. And that's all great. It's important, and it has good reach and impact of people who need to hear these stories. But we all know, from our experiences just in this room, that the greatest impact comes from the people who are closest to us, our teachers, our family, our friends, our bosses, the people that we look up to. So I look out here and I see that it is the stories of your survival, the stories of your loss, of your successes, of your friendships, of your failures, your victories, your loves, whatever your story is, it's those stories that will have the most direct impact, the greatest inspiration to the people around us at your dining table, in your office, in your school, in your church, and to the people in this room. A couple of years after my office meltdown, life was better. I was still making some bad choices and bad decisions, and there are people here who can attest to that. And being on TV at the time, I was more visible than the introvert in me would have liked. But even so, life was better than a couple of years before. I had made some friends, many in this room. I had a lot of good times, some a little too good. And I was no longer an ass at work, depending on who you ask. It was a Saturday night out with friends at the old garden. The dance floor was packed. The music was loud. The lights bouncing off of the smoke from the fog machines. And I was making my way through the back hallway to catch up with my friends at the patio. And just then, as I was walking, a large black lesbian stopped me. And the only reason I stop and use that description is because it's important to know how much different this person was from me and how much her life was likely different from mine. But she stopped me. She put her arms around me and she gave me the biggest, longest hug I think I've ever had. And she quietly said, "Thank you. Thank you for being here for us. We are all so different, and yet our stories have common threads that tie us together. Whether through words or pictures or music, even TikTok, they help us better understand who we are and who we can be, and is what we hand down from generation to generation and what we can give the people who are coming behind us." And that's the same reason why there are people here, not here, but people today who are telling us to put our hands down, to shut up, to be silent. They don't want us to tell our stories. They don't want anyone to hear them. There is an African proverb that goes, "Until the lion learns to write, every story will glorify the hunter." You are the lion who needs to write, to paint, to photograph, to sing your song. Your story is important. Your story is inspiring. And your story needs to be told. When I was transitioning from being a reporter to being a boss, or management weasel, as I called it, I always had a box of tissues on my desk. First, just in case someone came into my office and started sobbing like I did so many years ago. And they did. And I'm sure the look on my face was like my boss's face was. But the real reason I kept the box there, and though I've never told this story to anyone before and until this morning, I kept it there as a reminder of my story and how it began. So, I ask you, what's your story? I hope you're willing to raise your hand and tell it. So I wanted to take just about half of the time that was allotted to me with that, and then open it up to some questions or things you really want to hear.
The storytelling aspect, one of the things I look forward to every week is CBS Sunday Morning. And Steve Martin's, you know, I'm sitting there falling at this time with the story. But it's just amazing. But like you said, the average person, there's so much more going on behind the scenes for the average person than the struggles that they face and what they can give up somebody else. It's amazing generosity and the giving that is out there. We just don't see it as much as we should.
Yeah. You put your finger exactly on what I've discovered is that the stories with the most impact are not the celebrities. They're not the politicians, certainly not the politicians of either party. It's the people who are most like us who inspire us. And those are the stories that I've always loved telling, because we just hear things from their perspective. Just mentioning Sunday Morning, when I was in the Navy, I went to the Defense Information School in Indianapolis at the time. I'm just like 4 years of journalism college crammed into 6 weeks. So, I mean, you're there. And they had three TV studios, and one of the people who would show up was a young lady who was an anchor at one of the local stations there. And she would come in just so she could practice and work harder at and learn more about getting better at her job. Her name was Jane Pauley. Just go ahead and shout. You know, I like raising hands. I like that. But
being a Navy veteran myself, I know you've got the Navy stories.
Well, you know, there's an organization I can just say that I've seen some things in places that I never thought a small Iowa kid would ever see. And most of them I can't talk about because it's just, what? Well, I guess I have seen them and never mind. You know, there's an organization in town called Veterans Perspective, and it's a woman who goes around and she records veterans telling their stories. It's kind of like something that we should start, come to think of it, sitting down and telling our stories so they aren't lost. And she tells, and she does it, so, and she uses it for school lessons and things like that, so we can talk about things. And she's asked me if she can talk to me about mine, and I go, I had the most boring time in the service, because unlike, you know, even though I'm technically a Vietnam era veteran, I wasn't anywhere near in country, and I didn't see any action, thankfully, and so my stories are really kind of dull. I mean, I would hop in a helicopter and take spy photographs of Russian frigates and things like that. You know, I got to go on submarines and helicopters and things like that, but as far as anything exciting, I had a bunch of Marines aimed down on me in lock and load position with M16s, but it's like, I'm on your side. but they're Marines. You got to expect that. Rick?
I don't know about you, but I'm often filled with gratitude throughout my life of people that actually kind of knew me better than I knew myself. And kind of gave me a break. I wouldn't even say they necessarily encouraged me, but they gave me a break. And I'm really eternally grateful to those kinds of people. And I think maybe we all have people like that in our lives. And they're kind of unsung heroes in a lot of ways. Did you have people like that too?
Yes. Yeah.
For instance, your boss in some way.
My boss. Well, in a lot of different ways. And the boss I'm talking about is Paul Rhodes, for those of you who might remember him. You know, he was very understanding about a lot of things, and he was very smart in a way that people, I don't think, gave him a lot of credit for. But one of the things he allowed me to do is to say, I'm just going to take off for a week and go find stories. I mean, usually, you know, you're assigned something and you go out and you cover it that day. So that was, you know, unusual, but he gave me the permission, the freedom to do that. But over the course of years, he also encouraged me to find my own voice in telling the stories the way that I wanted to tell them, rather than trying to tell them the way that every newsman is supposed to tell stories. And I think that's what helped me grow as a writer and a TV person, even though I didn't like the TV aspect of it. I'm being on TV that much, to be honest with you, because I am an introvert, but it was part of the job, so I did it. It's like, I don't like giving up. Like, talking in front of people doesn't bother me. I just don't like doing it. But I know the importance of raising your hand. Of one of the proudest things I've ever done is emceeing the All Iowa AIDS benefit. I'm not an MC by heart, by nature. I am average at best. But at the time, I knew the significance of being there. And I guess, you know, I see the people who have done that all their lives, and it's following your footsteps that made it a little bit easier to do. And we don't tell ourselves or even our friends enough what they mean to us. And one of the things I'm trying to do in my old age is making sure I reach out to people who have done things that have helped me get from point A to point B without stubbing my toe too many times. Thank you for what you've done.
So I'm curious, as a journalist and a media professional, I often think Fox is a bunch of crap, too conservative, just them talking, it's all opinions, no news. And you hear that there's a message that they're licensed as a entertainment provider, not directly adhering to news journalism standards. Can you speak to, as a journalist and a professional, is that true? I mean, what's your perspective as a professional in that schism of whether they're actually telling the news or just spotting off opinions?
Well, there are a lot of businesses now that they're in it to make money, and they do it, you know, it is an entertainment program. And you have to really be smart enough to know when it's just talking heads. And I mean, they're all like that. CNN, MSNBC, they all have. You know, when CNN started, they just had news all day long, not talking heads, opinions, op-eds, editorials, which are all fine and good. But they don't make it clear that they're talking and this is all fact and we've researched all this and it's not our opinion. It's just, it's a lot of noise that they use to make money. A lot of organizations do that. I don't pick on Fox in particular. There, on the main networks, there were shows, and I can't remember if it was Dateline or something like that. It wasn't classified as a news program. It was run by their entertainment division, not their news department. And so they had different standards. Like, they would pay people for stories, whereas, you know, I call them real newsrooms. You don't pay for stories. You don't do that because you get what you pay for a lot of times. So yeah, I mean, it's just harder as a consumer to know what's fact, and you just have to be smarter about it. And unfortunately, a lot of people aren't, and so they hear this and they go, "Oh, that's the news." It's just all opinion. Jonathan.
Sides, and that went away, and I think that has contributed to polarization and someone calling themselves a news organization that really just entertained. I think the loss of that aristocracy.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And of course, it's the politicians who wanted to do away with this stuff so they could do what they're doing as and get away with more stuff. It's really the foxes watching the hen house a lot of times. And, you know, again, I don't point to any one particular party, because I've seen them all take advantage of that. So
I didn't really hear you talk about dealing with being gay in
the years you were in news, and you think the, I mean, you went to the it's all I read benefit. So you were right out there, but that didn't necessarily mean you were out. I don't know if you were. I guess just thinking about that, and if you ever experienced an issue with being gay in your years of reporting.
No, not really. And, you know, and that's really the truth with a lot of things, is that our fears are a lot worse than what the reality is. And I was lucky in a lot of ways, is that where I worked, you know, I didn't know at the time, because it was a different time where you didn't know if you're going to have a job. And there certainly wasn't anything stopping them from moving you along if they wanted to. So I didn't know, but I found out. You know, I never considered myself a gay journalist. I don't consider myself a Catholic journalist. I don't consider myself a veteran journalist. I was a journalist. And so I never attached anything before it. Some people did. I didn't. You know, I took my job seriously, and I kept, you know, I just try to tell other people's stories and not be a part of the story. I'm what they call the capital J journalist, where we kind of believe in very rigid certain ways to conduct your business. That's not necessarily the case anymore. But I've, you know, thankfully it was before social media, but I never got any letters, any phone calls or anything. I think I might've heard someone in a crowd once say a unkind word, but that was it. Doesn't mean that I didn't live my life openly. I try not to be political. I try not to take sides. I tried to make sure that your stories were told. You know, I would argue the stories that we needed to be telling. But that's true with, I think, any newsroom. And we're fortunate. Someone mentioned Dave Buzik a while. He was my direct boss in the newsroom as the news director. And he always, from the, you know, he'd been a news director for nearly 30 years, I think. And from the very beginning, when he hired people, he would always hire people looking for diversity in voices. We need to reflect our community. And so when we hired someone, it wasn't necessarily the best for the job. It was the best for the position and what we needed in the newsroom. We needed conservative voices in the newsroom to tell the story, to understand the story. We needed gay voices in the newsroom to tell the story and to help understand our community. We needed veterans. We needed people who are familiar with mental health. We needed people who are familiar with homeless. All those, way beyond, you know, the equal opportunity and all that, we have a much bigger audience that we needed to reflect. We never achieved it. We could always do better, but we at least tried. So. Well, thank you all.